Hello, and welcome back to the Wheel Talk podcast. My name is Abby Mickey, and we are here to chat about the Tour de Romandy and some transfer news. I'm joined today by my lovely team, Lauren Rowney.
G'day, g'day. Still Gracie's line.
Gracie Elvin.
Now what am I going to say? Hi, everybody.
Can you do an American accent?
Howdy.
Hey, no, y'all.
That was terrible.
I love how American accents like default to the South.
Yeah.
Welcome to the We All Talk podcast, where we talk about women's cycling. Before we dive into today's episode, you can support the Escape Collective in a way that suits you best by becoming a member with unlimited access to our web content. You can connect with editors on the Discord or stay in the loop with our weekly member newsletter. But if you aren't super keen for all of that, you can also just become a reader and have unlimited access to the content that we publish on escapecollective.com. There's a bunch of great stuff on there, some amazing tech coverage from Ronan McLaughlin, James Wong, and Dave Rome. The three of them are like the holy grail of tech coverage. I love everything that they do. A little bit different from what we do here at the Wheel Talk podcast, but still really fun to follow what they're doing. Their stuff is up there. Ian Treloar with all of his deep dives and wacky news. The spin cycle is one of my favorite things that we've got going on right now with Johnny Long. So check out what we've got going on at escapecollective.com. Become a member or a reader, whichever suits you best, at escapecollective.com/join. All right. I think we should talk a little bit about transfers first, because I can never remember which ones we've talked about, but I believe the ones that I have listed here we missed the last couple episodes. Jacob Alula announced that they had picked up a bunch of riders, a couple from Liv Racing Tech Find, Silke Smulders and
Janine Korova
from Liv. So they're going over. Quinty Ton as well, who's the, I believe, the like athlete representative for the CPA, was talking about the weather protocol at the CMAC Ladies Tour. So the three of them are going over to Jayco Alula, and also Anna Trevisi from UAE Team ADQ. Mm. She's kind of a longtime member of the Peloton, Italian. So interesting signing for Jayco Alula. And I feel like the more riders the team announces, I mean, there's like a couple riders that are retiring and a couple riders that aren't being re-signed. It seems like after going through a massive upheaval of the core team that they had for a really long time, like, was it 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that it's going to happen again to that team. And I hope that the riders that they have had the last couple of years that are going to stay are able to shift with the new riders coming in. I feel like it's always a weird dynamic when you have riders that have been a part of a team for a long time, or even a couple of years, and then you have like a massive onslaught of new riders coming in. And like Jess Allen retiring for one is going to be like, I think, a pretty big blow to that team. But they definitely have riders that are staying. But I think, yeah, I'm curious to see what this shuffle of Jayco Alula does to the team for next year and years in the future.
I think, is Alex Manley the only what would we say? Almost originals. I think she signed on around 2015. So
yeah,
she's basically,
I was thinking that.
Yeah.
She must be one of the kind of originals left. And also, they don't really have any big names anymore that I can really think of. Like, Alex Manley can definitely win races. Georgia Baker can win races. We've definitely got a few developing Aussie talents there. And then much more international mix once again. Feels like it's losing that Australian edge, even though they have to have a certain amount of Aussie riders because it is still a Australian registered team, but it's very far removed from the Aussie development days of past. It doesn't seem like it's a team where they're really trying to cultivate Aussie talent anymore. It's just they have good Aussie talent on it with other talent. And in my mind, I see Jayco Alula now more as a, I don't want to say second level team, because that doesn't sound good. I'm really not trying to like bag it out or anything, but it seems more of a team that's just off that level of world tour now. I just think that are still trying to be a top world tour team. And I think it might even be worth their while to step back and maybe not have even a world tour license going forward, or at least try and really focus a lot of their energy on some of the smaller races if they get starts at them, because I think that they could really develop some of these riders and get good results. But I think that they're asking a lot from the current team and the team for next year to be trying to get top world tour results. And again, I don't want that to sound bad, but that's just my honest opinion.
Looking at the nationalities on the team, I mean, they were already super diverse in their nationalities the last 2 years, but they've got like Norwegian, obviously like Urska Zegart, Slovenia, and two Italians, so three Dutch riders coming in, Spanish, Swedish. It's like, yeah, you're going to be even more international than it was before. And who we don't know about is the Australian trio of Georgia Baker, Alex Manley, and Ruby Roseman-Gannon haven't been announced yet where they're going. We know that Kristen Faulkner is leaving the team and that Jess Allen is retiring. And those three are the three that they haven't announced if they're keeping them. I would be shocked if they didn't stay, but we'll keep everybody posted on that as the days go on.
I mean, like you said, it hasn't been announced, but with the 2024 Paris Olympics coming up, being track riders, and I still feel, correct me if I'm wrong, Gracie, there's some sort of association between the track and that team, it seems a little bit. But again, yeah, I find it just, it's a bit sad because when I look back at the history of that team, like Gracie mentioned, there was always one big international rider that was scoring a lot of points. But at the same time, the Australian riders that were on that team, it feels to me, developed into really strong riders themselves, whether that was being led by example by those international riders or getting opportunities. So it doesn't feel like it's a pathway anymore. And someone was asking me the other day, actually, for Australian riders, does that pathway still exist directly to a World Tour team? And I don't think it's the same situation anymore with Jayco.
I think like some contacts are still there. And I think that they, like I said, they have to have probably 3 to 4 Australians on the team at all times, just for those UCI quotas per registration. But like, I think that's the pathway now, is that if you get lucky that a spot opens up for you as an Australian, that's it. But I don't think that they're necessarily scouting Australian talent directly as much as they were in the past.
I don't know if that rule is really exists anymore as it used to, because like for Trek Segafredo or Little Trek, I mean, mm-hmm. they in theory have to have more Americans than any other nationality, and they only have the one. I think that they did away with that rule a couple years ago, but I can't remember if that, because I remember like when Trek first formed the women's team, they were trying to find Americans to sign, and I spoke with them briefly, and then they signed Ruth. But there was like this question of like having a certain amount of Americans, and then I think the next year it was like, oh, okay, it's not as big a deal. Mm-hmm. We can look into it for the next episode. But yeah, I remember something about that rule changing or being, because there was also, remember back in the day they had the average age rule.
Oh yeah,
that's why I got signed. Always... yeah, exactly.
I got my first contract just because of that.
Yeah, and then they did away with that one as well. Interesting. Anyway, I'm curious to see if the live development team, like being linked to Jayco Alula, has any impact on Australians still being able to come through in some way, and Americans as well. With Liv, of course, but we will see how that shakes out in the future. This one I found really interesting. Paulina Roekes from Canyon SRAM to Phoenix to Kunik. Remember, she had like an awesome couple rides last year. There was a couple races where she was just like super strong, but it always just came down to her handling abilities, which were not great and cost her some results in the end. And so, yeah, interesting to see her going to Phoenix to Kunik, staying in the world tour, but and not really a step down, I would say, like a step to the side, because Phoenix to Kunik has really proved this year that they're quite a good team, a young team, but a good team. So I wonder how that will be. I think it'll actually be really good for her in her development. I don't know how good of a place Canyon SRAM is to develop. As like, I think that they develop young riders well, but I think if you're an older rider who needs some attention, that it's maybe not the place to be. But there are teams out there that will work with you no matter your age. And I think that Phoenix to Kunik is probably one of them.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right there, Abby. Knowing that team and still a bit of the old management, they're happy to work with riders on their weaknesses, develop their strengths as well, of course. But with Roekes, unfortunately, it just doesn't seem like she's improving at the rate that she should. I'm doing the little inverted bunny ears. And that's kind of how I see a rider like on Jayco Alula, like Urska is always on the back too. And it's not a joke of the commentary team, but I swear on GCN, whenever there's a back angle from the camera, the commentator will always bring it up that that's like her resident place in the peloton, and always feel a bit bad for those riders that they've been a few years in the peloton, but they're just not seeming to develop that really core ingredient of being a pro cyclist. And so for Roekes, yeah, it's great. You know, she's gotten another ride on a World Tour team, but they're a really aggressive team the way they race. So hopefully they can somehow get her, I don't know, into the earlier moves, but in different races where maybe the courses aren't as intimidating in terms of, narrow roads and such things. But for me, I think she's still going to just see her on the back. That sounds almost terrible, but that's just my impression.
I'm kind of glad you brought that up, Lauren, because I was thinking that too, especially watching Romandy. And I did notice that commentary about Urska, and it's not the first time they've said it, but we're all thinking it. So it's kind of harsh when they say it, but it's like so obvious and it's frustrating, especially if you're in your first year of racing, you get that free card to be that rider. But in your third year of being on a big team, it's just, it gets frustrating. And I can only imagine how frustrating it is for the directors and the other riders on that team. And Lauren, you and I have been in situations where we've had teammates that it doesn't matter what you say, they're just not going to fight in the bunch because they either are too scared or they don't quite get it. And like, I know that they're trying. It's not that they don't try or they don't want to be there. Like they are doing their best, but ultimately, talent's not enough in cycling. It's not enough in most sports, but definitely not in cycling, because you have to have all the ingredients. Like it's, you have to be willing to fight. You have to be willing to improve your skills at quite a decent rate. And positioning is like a core skill. Mm-hmm. It's just like, if you see a rider on the back constantly for years, historically, in my experience, they're actually never going to improve if that hasn't changed. And it's like, it's such a waste of talent, really, but it's maybe just not the right sport for them.
Yeah.
And that does sound harsh, but that's the truth.
Yeah. No, you're spot on there.
Yeah, not everyone can be Evie Stevens.
No,
but even now, I think Evie Stevens, in the era that we're in, like she wouldn't be getting the results that she got 10 years ago. That's just a fact. Because like Gracie said, it is such a core ingredient. And we did, you know, over the course of women's professional cycling, you've always had those freak athletes with incredible engines and were able to just get by. But it's just, you can't anymore. You have to have it all the ingredients. And it's sad to see, but like Gracie said, it's, you know, it's not the sport for everyone. It's an endurance sport, yeah, but...
And now, especially nowadays, like you said, Lauren, maybe 10 years ago it was different, but now you really need to have those technical skills.
Yeah.
Like it's the Peloton is so much faster than it was even 5 years ago.
And we'll see some young riders, like I'm curious, a rider that comes to mind is someone like Kim Cadzow, who's only 21, but she started the sport late, and she's someone I do notice hanging off the back too. Again, first year pro, like Gracie said, you get a bit of leeway once you're trying to find your way around the peloton. But after a few years, if it doesn't click, the World Tour teams will, their interest will move on from such a rider and put it in someone else because, yeah, that's just the nature of the sport and how it's developed.
But you can be... You can be on a team, a World Tour team that believes in you and puts in the time and effort to try to teach you. And I think with Paulina, she's not had that. And so I think, I hope that Phoenix Tikhonik is a place that will, if they've signed her, yeah, that they'll help her develop more in her technical abilities. Same with Kim Cadzow, where she rides next year, whether it's Jumbo or another team, I think another team would maybe be more interested in helping her develop. Jumbo is not that place, I don't think, but...
It's a Dutch team, and it's...
It's the Dutch.
They expect you to be able to ride in a peloton.
Yes, they do. speaking of Jumbo, so they announced two riders that they've signed. I'm just going to... Everyone knows I can't pronounce names, although somebody gave me kudos for being able to pronounce names on the Placeholders podcast recently, and I don't know where that came from. I must have been... I don't know, half asleep or something and slurring, and then it sounded right. Minty Gertz from Mancha. Lotto Destiny. Mancha.
Gertz. So it's because there's a little thing called Nancha in the Netherlands, which is this little bunny rabbit. It's Miffy, actually. So I just know that name. Mancha.
Interesting. Yeah, the 19-year-old on Lotto Destiny. So she's signed for Jumbo Visma as well as Margot Vigier. From France, 28-year-old from, Life Plus Wahoo. Did I say that? I don't know. Anyway, she's also signed with Jumbo Visma. I find that a very interesting signing, actually, for them. But yeah, two riders to Jumbo Visma. And then FDJ also announced two more signings for them. Coralie DeMay, which is a name that I think everyone would maybe recognized. She's been in the sport for a while, 30 years old, but she was on FDJ before it became the World Tour team that it is now. So she's returning to the team on a 2-year deal. And then Leah Koroner, who's been on DSM for the last 2 years, and before that she was on Arkea, another French rider, only 22. So yeah, adding some French talent to their roster for next year. And then also EF Education Cannondale announced a bunch of signings that we missed. I think the most interesting one is Lotta Hintala signed.
Yeah. I was actually really surprised by that. Just, you know, I thought her whole comeback, the story was really inspiring. And how AG Insurance really got behind her, and they were the ones who were like, we think you should come back and we'll support you the best you can. And I think she had a great season as a first season back in the peloton after being a mum and stepping away. And yeah, I just thought it was interesting to move to that team, and another American team.
Yeah, that's a really interesting move. I'm curious to see... Why? I don't know if we'll ever know why she would step away from AG Insurance. She's not been racing with them a ton in the second half of the year, so I feel like there's a story there, but I'm not going to ask her. And then Claire Koppenberg from a couple years at Cofidis, she joins the EF Education Cannondale team, as well as Lizzie Stannard from Israel Premier Tech, and they re-signed Mags, the young Canadian on the team, which is awesome. So, yep. That's the biggest transfers in the World Tour / EF's not a World Tour team, but they're World Tour adjacent. I feel like they're
They're going to be operating as you would assume a World Tour team.
Yeah, should. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be operating better than a couple of the World Tour teams. Especially now, like, so with the, I keep an eye on the demotion relegation situation. And it seems like all of the World Tour teams that are currently World Tour teams are going to hold on to their licenses, whether they should be World Tour or not, basically on technicalities. Like
examples.
Yeah, because Jayco and Liv are merging.
Yeah.
So that like has that one spot. And UAE's development team has landed themselves within the relegation, but they can't be World Tour because they're a development team. They're pretty high up, actually. I feel a couple World Tour teams should maybe be embarrassed about that. But yeah, so because of that, there's like two to three spots because EF is folding. So there's three spots in the top 15 that are basically open. And that means that Human Powered Health, Israel Premier Tech, and would you throw Uno X in there? Probably. I hate to do it, but it's kind of true.
So I feel like this year, in terms of how they've raced, is the best that they have raced.
For sure. Since I think they're improving massively. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I agree.
On the upward trajectory.
Points for trying.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then but we were just... We were just like super harsh, or not harsh, but like super real about like hanging off the back of the peloton when you really should be farther up. And I feel like it's still a professional sport, and whether you have the money is one thing, but if you can't, I don't know. I hate being negative.
Yeah. It's complicated as well. So
it is very complicated. Ain't that the truth? Yep. Anyway, all right. We'll talk more about the relegation / promotion when the season's over. We've only got like a month to go until then, and we'll dive into that a little bit more. Should we talk about the Tour de Romandie?
Doesn't it feel like it's over after this weekend? I don't know.
It's not. We still have the China race.
It's just because I've seen... I guess some people are on holidays already, so it's like, oh yeah. Normally this is the week of Worlds, but here we are.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's Europeans this weekend.
Of course.
They do the Bamberg.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, so fun. So yeah, because you like, for anyone who doesn't know, Worlds and Europeans switched spots on the calendar this year because of the Super Worlds. So we would normally have had this a month ago, but now we have it this weekend. So will be interesting to see if Lorena Wiebes can hold on to that European champion jersey, and or if it's going to be somebody else who claims it for the year to come. But Tour de Romandie, the last European stage race of the Women's World Tour overall.
Wow, went out with a bang in Europe. No, it was such an aggressive tour.
It was. Like, all three stages were super aggressive. Really aggressive. And I feel like there's a lot to talk about with all of them. Like, there's a lot of big picture stuff to talk about. Should we dive into the first stage first and kind of see where we go from there?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, so first stage, super aggressive, really fast. It came down to a bunch sprint, but... not really, because there was a solo rider off the front who almost took the win. She sat up too early and was passed by Sofia Bertazzolo for her first World Tour win, which is kind of crazy because I feel like Bertazzolo's been there and thereabouts for years at this point. And it wasn't until she won the first stage when I realized that she's pretty young, actually. But yeah, first World Tour win for Bertazzolo, and Karina Schrempf, she almost had it. She was real close. It led to some interesting back and forths on social media where she claimed that she sat up in frustration, but she looked really happy in all the photos. So
it was definitely a salute.
I
reckon we all made a sound when we watched it separately, like, oh yeah. No.
Have you learned nothing from the past?
Yeah. Oh, It happens at least once a year, if not more. Like, yeah. It's kind of funny, but also just heartbreaking.
So painful because she's tried. Yeah. You know, she's had a great season, this rider. When you look at her results, like if you just quick scan, you think, okay, there's nothing that impressive, but she is a rider who is out there on the attack. And it was a brilliant late attack. And I really thought, holy crap, like with 200 to go, she's got this because she was holding the pace. But yeah, so close, but no cigar. Don't post up too early.
Yeah, if she'd just done like two more pedal strokes, yeah, she would have had it, is the thing. And then, yeah, so Sophia was just coming like way faster from behind. Yeah.
It's good to see at least someone else, like someone new, get a win. So it was kind of like good and bad at the same time.
Yeah. I think it would have been pretty cool for Phoenix de Kooning to take another World Tour win after their win at the Tour de France Femme of X-Swift. But it was still like, yeah, definitely for Sophia. I think she's a rider who she's won, I think, the junior junior European Championship. She's been like a promising rider for a long time. And for her to win a World Tour race finally is just going to boost her confidence. And especially, I think, after UAE, maybe this year didn't have as good a season as they did last year. Like last year, they were a huge talking point at the end of the season because of Silvia Persico. And then this year, I think there was a lot of eyes on Persico and like Marta Bastianelli in the beginning of the season. And Persico really didn't have the season this year that I think we would have expected of her, which is fine. She's a young rider. Like, I think that she'll have great seasons to come. But I think that that team would have leaned heavily on her. And so for another rider to be able to get a win when they've been focused so much on Chiara Consoni and Persico is pretty good to see. Like, we want teams to have that depth. And we'll talk about it when we talk about Canyon-SRAM in this race. But I feel like the more teams have depth and have more riders that they're able to go for, the more that we're not going to have the situation that we have this year with SC Works.
Yeah, thank God for the teams like Phoenix de Kooning and Canyon-SRAM who have been racing so aggressively and then getting close to the win or just pulling it off. Like, yeah, like you said, we're going to get into Canyon-SRAM's racing. But that has, I'm sure when we have the season wrap up, those will be two of the teams that we'll be talking about a lot and have made the racing really exciting.
Yeah, let's talk about Canyon-SRAM actually, because I think we can link Canyon-SRAM into stage two. We had, I think that somebody counted and Kasia Niewiadoma attacked over 10 times on the first stage. And the second stage, Canyon-SRAM had tons of riders in there. Like in the, it was a really mountainous stage, two category one climbs. After the first Cat 1 climb, the peloton was significantly reduced, and we had Anna Shackley of SC Works and Silvia Persico up the road. But Canyon-SRAM was doing a bulk of the work, all of the work, with their young German riders, Antonia Niedermayer and Ricarda Bauernfeind. The two of them were doing a bunch of work, and then we also had Elise Shabby and Kasia Niewiadoma in that group. So they had four super strong riders. They were the only other team that had that strength in that group was SC Works. And I feel like Canyon-SRAM is in this situation where we were really hard on them earlier in the season. And if you look at their season as a whole, they've had like quite a journey, all of them together. And they rode really well on the second stage. It was with Niedermayer on the front, she reduced the peloton massively. And then when Bauernfeind got on the front, she did the same. And it kind of set it up perfectly for Demi when she went, but Kasia was able to just sit in the wheels and basically have a free ride. And then Kasia did what she does and maybe
got a bit enthusiastic. Little bit
too much work. Yeah. I got a little excited, but like still for her to finish second on the stage, we want her to win, but it's like these baby steps that Canyon-SRAM is taking that every single one of them is going to add up. And I just hope that that means that they can like carry that into next season and we see them succeed earlier in the season next year. Cause I think that they are really pulling in like all of this new talent and really utilizing it. And And I think it means that they know what they're doing now, I hope, maybe. I mean, I would hate for them to change because I love how aggressive they are. They make the racing so much more exciting. But I also want them to win more. So it's this weird kind of tightrope that they're walking. Tightrope that they're walking at the moment.
Yeah, I feel like, the new import of, they've got a new DS this year. I guess he's in the car mostly now. I'm not too sure about that, but they're really fighting for the win. That's the difference now. Like Cassia had every chance and opportunity on stage two to win that stage. I really thought she was in the running, and it's different to what we saw before, but that's because the team itself has that climbing prowess now. They really have got the numbers. Like you said, I think once was it Shackley got caught, they had four riders, SD Works, but Canyon Shram still had three. And they were the most well-represented teams, and then everyone else was kind of just individuals or ones and twos. So that's the major difference here, and it's building confidence. In Cassia, I think she's really confident that she can do it, and I'm curious to see what happens next year in these tours. And then on top of that, these young riders, like the two German riders, I think they're going to develop themselves from this aggressive style of racing into their own GC contenders for the future.
Yeah, and I think that's the key word. They're young. They've got that fight and that hunger, and they probably don't have that feeling of the pressure to lose yet. Like, they're just trying stuff, and that's helping Cassia, because this young blood in the team, they're all just having a crack, and they're kind of helping her feel like she doesn't have as much to lose as well. I think that's kind of rubbing off on her too, which is cool.
Mm-hmm. I think that she's feeling a little bit of pressure to retain her spot on the team, her like leadership role, with a bunch of the riders that are coming in and able to win World Tour races. She's got like the notoriety that it's harder for her to win than for them to win. But I think that having them there, and especially Chloe Dygert, is kind of a fire under her ass to maybe switch things up a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, Kasia loves to win. Like, yeah. She's a winner. And it's not like she's not been working hard. She always works hard. I think it's just a matter of her, like, trying new things, maybe. But she came really close on the second stage. Demi Vollering is quite hard to beat, as it turns out.
Well, it looks like, you know, she's come down off the Tour de France world, had a bit of a break, and has built back up, and she was really strong again on the weekend. But that said, I mean, like, she was breathing hard too. It's very obvious when Cassia is having a real dig and a crack at it, because she's very expressive in her face. But you could see, like, it wasn't an easy win for Demi. It wasn't a win where she just rode away. So I think that made, just in general, a really nice race to watch.
Yeah, and I thought looking at kind of the rest of the top 10-ish, that there's some interesting things to take away from that. Marlen Roeser in third, she had a pretty good ride for it being a final climb. And I was curious about how stage three was going to go, with Demi's comments after the race about how, like, she would like to see Marlen win on home soil. But we'll get into that in a second. Juliet Labus in fourth is unsurprising. She's an incredible climber. Nee Fisher Black, it was great to see her in fifth back up there on the climb. Four SD Works riders in the top five, with Anna Shackley in ninth. Just like classic stuff. But yeah, I guess I was pretty surprised that Guy Riolini finished a minute down on that climb. I think, like, for her, it wasn't hard enough of a climb for her to excel, or just wasn't steep enough. It was kind of, there was a pretty big group still going into the final 2-3K. But maybe it's been a long season for Riolini for such a young rider. So I was surprised, but I also, yeah, I also hope that it's something that she's not going to like beat herself up about. You know, like when you're a young climber and you're in a race where there's a mountaintop finish, you put so much pressure on yourself, whether or not you're riding well, you think, okay, I'm a great climber. Everyone always tells me I'm a great climber. I'm going to be able to climb well. And 10th isn't bad at all, but we also saw her climb incredibly well earlier in the season. So yeah, I
no, you're spot on. I mean, even the commentators were saying like, she must just be licking her lips waiting for this final climb. It's got her name written all over it. But actually Gracie brought up this point as well, that the season, particularly for young riders, it is long, and some people are flying right now and some people are just waiting for that last race to be over and to get on their vacation and start thinking already about 2024. And so for her, I'm sure if she was in her typical form, like what we've seen, say, at the Giro, she would have done really well.
Speaking of like a hard season, and somewhat, I've seen a couple of people on the Discord chat bring this up as well. Something I've been thinking since Worlds is like, why is Marlon Roosa still doing so much racing? Like, that's been surprising to me that they, I don't know, it didn't seem like she got much of a break, especially after such a big blowout at the time trial at Worlds.
I wonder if it's because she felt more pressure in a time trial environment than she does in a road race. It looks like she has a lot of fun when she's racing in a road race, and it's obviously like a very different role. So I think that I would hope that the team isn't making her race when she doesn't want to, or when she's mentally, she feels like she's not ready to be there. But I do think as one of the top riders on that team that they would listen to her if she's saying like, look, I really need a break. And that she's in this race because without a time trial, there's less pressure for her, or even like, especially the world's time trial and her being her and everyone being like, oh, Ellen Van Dijk is out. Marlon Roosa is going to win. There's no competition. Well, that's so much pressure for her for like the entire year building up. Like, the second that Ellen announced that she was pregnant, the pressure was on, and then she was would have been feeling that all year long. And I think that that's the reason that that all culminated in the time trial as it did. But I think for a road race, it's very different.
Good point. And I mean, next year, the Worlds are in her home country. So as well as the year.
I meant Australia. I don't know where in the world anywhere is.
Because the champs are in Zurich, so that will be a huge goal for her. And of course Ellen Van Dijk will be back in the peloton then, but hey, I'm putting my money on Grace Brown next year.
That's not a bad bet at all.
Segue, sorry to go completely off topic here, but Ellen posted that she rode 17,000 kilometers in 40 weeks of being pregnant. That is amazing.
I love that you bring this up, Gracie, because I rode on the road for the first time on Saturday since January. Yes, since January, other than like riding around on my town bike. And it was 45 kilometers, and I'm only 23 weeks pregnant, but it was so uncomfortable. And I was like talking to my friend about it. I'm like, how has Ellen been riding like consistent 3-hour rides? Yeah. Don't get it. Well, I know I'm not an athlete, one. But it's
good
horrible.
Job, Lauren. Good work for getting out on your bike.
Yeah,
well
I
done.
Agree.
Thanks.
But yeah, like on average, that's 60 kilometers a day for 40 weeks. So that's obviously nuts. She didn't do that, but like she would have had some easier days and some longer days.
More, yeah.
Exactly.
No, she was doing like 3-hour rides and stuff. So,
but she was bloody fit before she got pregnant too. But like still, all of the variables, it's still impressive.
Man. That's why I reckon, like, she's still in for a shot next year, and she really believes it in Paris. So, anyway, Incredible women, huh?
Yeah, some of them are, they're just like a different breed.
I expected nothing else. I swear I saw pictures of her and her TT bike with a pregnant belly. I'm like, how is that possible?
Yeah, meanwhile, I had like my freaking handlebars like this. And I was like,
it's like a Dutch town bike.
Upside down. Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. That's so crazy. I couldn't ride outside after like 4 months. I just rode the trainer.
It's too uncomfortable.
Yeah, it was awful. Like, I couldn't get my bike in the position.
45 minutes.
No. It's just, if you ride the trainer, you can just hop off and go to the bathroom. It's like not, and there's snacks, like all the time.
Snacks. Snacks are key. And a fan.
Oh, man, that's just so crazy. And like really impressive, but also like, don't try this at home, kids.
Yeah. She's doing this under guidance of many professionals, I'm sure.
Yeah, got a whole team around her, I'm sure. Like every medical team, mental.
Not just a Swift training program.
Yeah, exactly. Not just Danny Rose Swift training program.
Bump on board.
Yeah, that was my jam for like 5 months. Anyway, yeah, Marlon.
Back to the race.
Yeah. So the Demi's comments after the stage really made me believe that they were gonna be riding really aggressively on the final stage for Rooster to take the overall, but it was mostly Canyon SRAM again and a little bit of DSM that did most of the aggressive riding on that final stage. It did come down to a reduced bunch sprint of like 25 riders, and it was won by Liana Lippert, and I want to break down this sprint. Because I wrote something on the site, because watching the sprint, I feel like there were moments of the sprint and the leading up to the sprint that I felt it was notable to dissect. And then as I was writing it, I was like, I don't think there's actually enough for me to write an article out of this, but it was too late. And I just would like for two people who know more about sprinting to weigh in and tell me that this was an interesting sprint.
I don't know. I've only watched it twice, but I'm curious what you think, Gracie. But like, yeah, Femme went really early, obviously, and that's what they said. I almost felt like at the point when she went out, it would have been a perfect lead out for someone behind her. But it was, I don't know, a bit messy.
Yeah, it was messy. It was like a messy 5K into that.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, everyone's a little bit tired. It's only a 3-day tour, but by day three, you're tired of any tour. So tired legs, smallish group, lots of corners. The Swiss roads are beautiful and smooth, but there's still a lot of road furniture to navigate. They saw the finish twice, I think, before then. So they kind of knew where they needed to be positioned, and real sprinters in that group compared to rest of the season. So I think everyone's just a bit on edge about who's taking the leadership in a lead out situation. Didn't seem to be any lead outs. It was messy. And it was won by someone that was strong enough to just keep herself in good position the whole time. And that's what Liana Lippert is proving herself to be very good at. And she's probably been good at it for a really long time, but we're really noticing it this year. You just need that like 5-minute power, not just like that peak power for that kind of sprint. Even, of course, she's got a good 20-minute power, but you just need that really, really strong 5-minute power roughly. So you're holding that high pace and you're able to move yourself up. You're not spiking your watts too much, but you're also just hovering below that red line where other people go into the red if they're moving themselves up. And she's just got that really good power now to survive that kind of positioning changing. She had a bit of help from her teammates, but that's just how you win a sprint when you're a little bit of a class above everyone else in a group of 25. Good timing too.
Yeah, I felt like timing was a huge part of it. Like she had Paolo Patino on the front with in the final kilometers, like the final 1 point something K, because there was still a tax going all the way up until 1K to go. And so Paola was on the front for Lippert. And then when Paola peeled off, that was when Femme Van Empel went. And I think that Femme, it wasn't that she went too early. It was just that she chose to go long. The road bended. So it wasn't like, it wasn't the wrong decision per se. She just didn't have the power to hold it. Because she was on the front, she could choose her line when the road curved in those final 300 meters. And I think, like, had she had a little bit more of a kick, she would have won the stage. But Lippert just had been in the wheels, so she was able to patiently wait and use her bullets more effectively. And there was a moment that I found super interesting when Lippert was behind Marlon Roeser and she could have gone right or left. And had she gone right, she wouldn't have had to stop pedaling, but she chose to stop pedaling, move her wheel around to the other side of Roeser and then go, because she had a way clearer line on the left side. And what I found super impressive about Lippert and this win was that she had the legs, but she also had the like clarity. Like her brain was fully working enough to be like, okay, I'm going to go to the left of Roeser instead of the right. Because that was the line that was clearer to the finish. So I feel like it was like a super fascinating sprint, in that because we didn't have the sprinter types, it meant that it was a little bit more slow motion. So there was more elements of it that you could kind of pick apart versus like when it's a proper sprint and it happens really quickly, it was slower. And I think, yeah, I mean, another really great win for Leona Lippert. I think it's her third or fourth world tour win, but I was surprised that she didn't ride better on stage two, but like we said, it's been a freaking long season. And one of the things that also really impressed me about her was the end of the race, her post-race comments. She was so confident. And for a rider that young, obviously she just won, so does come into play a little bit. But for a rider that young to just be so confident in her own ability is really cool.
And she's going to need that confidence going into 2024, where she can be the leader, one of, if not the biggest leader on that team. So, good way to end the season. Well, that said, I guess they're going to be racing next weekend, a lot of these riders.
Yeah, I think a lot of them will be on Sunday at the Europeans. I'm curious if Demi's going to go to the Europeans, actually, or if I imagine she will, especially if it's.
It's a home race.
Yeah,
but maybe she'll be working for some other Dutch rider. I mean, she's won enough this year.
Yeah,
for Webers.
She's won enough this year. It's getting boring. She's like, I can't. There's no such thing as winning enough. She just wants it all.
No, it's but like, on the topic of Roeser, it would have been too much to segue completely to the Europeans. But like you were saying, I was also really surprised how well she rode this past weekend. She was just incredibly strong, like we've seen the rest of the season. But this coming weekend is the time trial, right? So that will be interesting. I mean, you would say on paper she is the one to beat, and she currently has form. So I'm very, defending, very curious.
I think Rhianna Marcus might give her a run for her money, but we'll see. Any other major talking points from the Tour de Romandy? Kane Schramm, aggressive all three stages, really aggressive all three stages. Hopefully they carry that kind of momentum of adapting, growing, becoming more successful into next season. Demi is very good at bike racing. And I think it was cool to see in that final stage that other teams were really aggressive, and SD Works had to play defense. They didn't, I think they wanted Roeser to win, but they didn't really have any other choice than to just ride in defense of the jersey. They couldn't play with the peloton as much as they have all year long. It wasn't like they were in control the entire time. Which I found fascinating. There was also a move at one point that had Cecily Utrecht-Ludwig, Vollering, Kasia, and Leona Lippert in it. And I was like, man, any other year, like any year previously, the race would be over. But it wasn't. Like, women's cycling has changed so much in the last 3 years. Am I right? I'm right.
Yeah. But yeah, SD Works. Fun fact, I was just having a look after the results this weekend of the World Tour rankings and the individual UCI rankings. And I think they've got 4 riders in the top 10. So
yeah, they're very good.
That kind of speaks volumes about the incredible depth and
just
amount
this year that
of winningness.
Just,
it's
nuts. It's so crazy. But next race, besides the Europeans this weekend, is the Tour of Trongming Island, October 12th to the 14th. 3 sprinter-friendly days, very sprinter-friendly days. I expect to see Lorena Wiebes there. She's the defending champ. She won all 3 stages in 2019, the last time the race was held.
Do you think she'll go? Is she on the list?
I don't know. I mean, I think she will, but also maybe SD Works skips it.
I would lean more towards, I wouldn't want to go to that race if I was.
I mean, if it's not,
if I've won
Wiebes,
that much already.
It's going to be Chiara Consoni, I bet, who wins a lot. I'm going to wrap up the episode. Somebody asked me on the Discord how I started this podcast. And I just want to give a really brief answer before we talk about what we're obsessed with. In 2017, I was making $8,000 that year racing my bike, and it wasn't enough to pay my rent and also buy food. So I was like, well, I'm going to start a side gig of having a podcast because there was Patreon and I figured that somebody would want to hear what I had to say. So I started a podcast called the Wheel Talk Podcast, where I would interview riders, DSs, like mechanics within the women's bubble. And very quickly that podcast got picked up by Vox, or I got picked up by Vox Women, and Lauren was working for Vox Women, and we started podcasting very much like this podcast, about the races and just talking about women's cycling, the news of women's cycling. And that evolved into being the Freewheeling Podcast for the cycling tips, for cycling tips, which is when Gracie joined us. And then when that came to an end, I reclaimed the Wheel Talk Podcast, revived it from the dead. And now this is where we are.
Well, it's like 7 years, Abby.
I can't believe it, actually. Mm-hmm. Those old episodes do exist in the feed. Some of the riders that I interviewed, and if anyone listens to them, I mean, the audio quality must be just terrible, and I really didn't know what I was doing. But I've always been able to make friends very easily. Like when I was a kid and we would go camping and stuff, I would have a best friend from 2 grand campgrounds over within like an hour of getting to the campsite. So podcasting and interviewing people seemed like it was a good fit for me. And here we are. So I don't know if it worked out, but I'm definitely having fun chatting with you too.
Hey, and podcasting back then was a lot harder because we just went off what we were reading on Twitter and race reports, and
there was
trying
no
to pull
live coverage.
Pieces together of what the hell happened in the race. And then, you know, basically speaking with riders is how you could get a lot of on the ground sort of.
Remember when you literally went to Flesh Wallonne for Vox Women and there was no live coverage and you were standing at the finish line with your with your phone, like live streaming the finish?
Yeah.
That was only like 4 or 5 years ago.
No. That was 2017.
Okay. Well,
thank God
still.
We've come a long way from then. And I still remember interviewing Cassia before the race, and she was like really excited about it because her family were going to be there and watch a race, and then she podiumed. And so that was very cool.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah. Crazy. We've come a long way. Now we can watch the racing.
Thank the Lord. All right. What's everyone obsessed with this week?
House things.
Yay!
Because I'll be moving houses in November, so it's like very exciting. I'm obsessed with it, but at the same time terrified too, because I've realized how much stuff is involved with moving, like packing up, but then also making sure you've got all the right things, and that you actually order your curtains and blinds on time, because that takes a while.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So house things.
Nice.
That's exciting. Crazy. But also moving sucks.
Yeah.
I'm actually the same. I'm doing house stuff too. So I'm doing a bunch of DIY, and every time I get quotes from people, I'm just like, ugh, no, so much money. So I'm just like, I'll do it myself. So I'm learning how to put a pergola up with some help, and we're doing some landscaping. So I've just hired a mini digger and a skip bin, and I'm going to clean some bricks, and I'm going to make our garden nice. And yeah, I'm just becoming a bit of a tradie lady, which is kind of fun. Getting ripped, getting big jacked arms.
Gracie, I think last podcast I said you're going to have to, I mean, we're moving towards winter now, obviously, in Europe, but like next year the garden is like a big thing we need to do. And I think DIY is such a nice thing to do as well. We haven't had time for anything else within the house, unfortunately. Hoping to get some secondhand stuff that will give it a bit more character, but definitely the outdoor stuff. I'm so excited about having a little garden and maybe some chickens and things like that. So, and we've got actually, the house came with what's it called? In Dutch it's a serra, but a glass house, a hot house.
Oh, a greenhouse. Cool.
Greenhouse. Yeah.
You can grow tomatoes.
Yes. Yeah. We got a little greenhouse. So that will be project 2024.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's one of my favorite things.
And you'll be a pro by then. So.
Oh, yeah. It's so nice being retired and like having time and your own place to like cultivate stuff. Like, I'm not buying herbs anymore. I'm growing them, and that's so nice because they don't go off. I just pick what I need, and they're in the pot. It's great.
There's like no basil anywhere in Andorra. I can never find basil. I need a basil plant. I have finally been able to watch Barbie last night.
Oh, wow. And?
Yeah. I loved it. I cried like 3 or 4 times. I feel like being a mom good. Watching it like made it even more emotional. Mm-hmm. There was a lot that I feel like it was pretty short. They packed like a ton into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I loved it. I loved every second of it.
Do you love Margot Robbie more now?
Yes, 100%.
So, because I'm obsessed with her. Like I said, I'm not obsessed with celebrities. Like, I never have been, but for some reason.
Margot Robbie?
Yeah, she's just, my whole pass.
She was the perfect person to play Barbie.
Oh, yeah.
She's amazing. And Lauren's hung out with Margot Robbie. So
yes,
she
it's
actually,
a fact.
What?
Yep.
Yes. Yep. Friend of a friend. Mm. Very jealous.
That's nuts.
Way back when. That's a story for another time. Probably the coolest thing I've done in my life. In reflection,
I feel like I saw like a ton of backlash to Ryan Gosling being Ken, and I don't know like who could have done that better. Like, he was amazing.
Yeah, like, everyone was amazing. I'm obsessed.
Everyone
with that
was
movie.
Yeah. The whole casting was amazing. Like, America Ferrera was awesome. Like,
all the sex education stars. I love that.
Yeah,
show.
There were so
like,
many sex education actors in there. And the one guy is about to be Doctor Who. He's the new doctor in Doctor Who.
Oh.
Yeah. Man, I'm so excited. Anyway, it was great. I'm obsessed with Barbie. the soundtrack was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you cried because I saw it with Lauren when I was hanging out with her, and I cried that whole time. And then I saw it again. I made Kimberly watch it with me, and she didn't want to watch it, but I made her watch it, and I cried even more the second time.
I love it. Are you going to let Lila play with Barbies?
I think I will. Yeah.
I have Barbies.
I mean, if she wants to. Yeah. I had Barbies. I had my mom's Barbies. Like, my mom gave me her Barbie. So they were old and, like, all the clothes were handmade and they weren't super fun. But, you know what I absolutely loved as a kid that I really hope that Lila likes, which is actually owned by Mattel. They didn't used to be owned by Mattel, but American Girl dolls. which you guys probably wouldn't know being from Australia. But they started out as like, they were like historical dolls. So there was like one from the Great Depression. There was like one from the, like, I don't know, the Revolutionary period. There was like a bunch of different historical dolls. And it was always like the one that you had, you were like super proud. Like I had Samantha, and she was like, I can't remember when. She must have been like she would have been like the Gold Rush, maybe. I don't know. Mm. Anyway, and then my sister had Molly, which was another, none of this means anything to you guys, but somebody listening will be like, oh yeah, I had this one. And then they also did like lookalikes. So you could pick if you wanted one with blonde hair and green eyes or like black hair and brown eyes or whatever. And so I had one with blonde hair and green eyes. I named it Abby Jr. those dolls were like everything. Yeah. It's hilarious. My mom was like, what do you want to name her? And I was like, Abby. Just like me.
Yeah, you gotta have something relatable. It's good to see some more diversity in
toys. Actually, well, I'll tell you a story about it off mic because I definitely can't put it out into the world, but yeah, so I hope that Lila has some interest in American Girl dolls, just because I still have my American Girl dolls, and we have so much cool stuff for them, like skiing equipment and camping gear and like climbing stuff. And there was I went through like a figure skating phase, and so she's got like figure skates and like a little outfit. And so I'm like, I hope that all of that, my mom saved every single thing, and so I hope that it all kind of comes back and that she wants to play with those. But she only wants to wear her hat backwards and ride her bike around, so I don't know if she's
wears her hat backwards.
Yeah. She wakes up in the morning and she like points at her hat and she's like, hat, hat, hat. And then I give it to her and she puts it on backwards. So I don't think she's going to be a doll person, but we'll see.
They all go through funny phases. And if anything, if she doesn't like it, you still get to play with them if you introduce them.
It's true.
You'll probably still have fun anyway.
Every once in a while, I pull my American Girl dolls out of the closet and hide them in my sister's room because they're quite terrifying if you don't know that they're there. but man, we had so much fun with our American Girl dolls. Anyway, all right. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back next week to talk about the European Championships and preview the tour of Chungming Island. Thanks you two for your time. Bye.